Let's return to the Song of Songs or the Song of Solomon and remind you that this is PG-13 material, so keep that in mind if you have younger children at home. But also that I am of the opinion that this is an Israeli opera dedicated to King Solomon and intended to celebrate the love that is growing between two of his workers, a young man that apparently works with his animals and a young lady that works not only in the palace but also around the palace grounds, taking care of the goats that are part of probably the kitchen flock. And this opera has a back and forth between these two young lovers, singing to each other about their love. They have found time in order to spend outdoors during the siesta time, the hot part of the day, whenever they're taking care of sheep and goats, probably not very far from Jerusalem. And they share lunch and share sweet words, share some kisses, and the chorus, probably sometimes it's men, sometimes it's women, maybe it's sometimes both, they're singing back in response to the love songs of these two characters in this opera. So with that in mind, let's return to Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse number 8. This is the young lady still singing here. Ah, the voice of my beloved. Behold, he comes. He's leaping over the mountains. He's bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. And so this is almost parallel to some of our dramatized versions of love stories in our modern era, where everything slows down, where the couple is running toward each other, and sometimes it's in fields, sometimes it's in vineyards, and they're looking at each other, and it's just a drawn-out understanding of anticipation, of being in each other's presence, right? That's what the point is. Well, that seems to be what's coming through here, is that she pictures her beloved like a gazelle or a young stag that is running over the mountains, running over the hills, trying to get to where it needs to be. And where it needs to be, in this case, is he needs to be with her. So behold, there he stands behind our wall. He's gazing through the windows. He's looking through the lattice. So apparently, she pictures him coming actually to where she lives and trying to catch sight of him. My beloved speaks and he says to me, "Arise, my love, my beautiful one, come away. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come. The voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land." So this seems to indicate that he is coming to her. Maybe it's a day off from work here, and he wants to spend a little time with her. He invites her to come and enjoy the spring, because that's what he describes. The winter rains come starting usually around in November, and they're on and off, and it's cool and cold, right up until February or so. And then the rains taper off, and things start to get kind of warm in Israel. And with all that rain, and then the coming of the warmth, everything starts to blossom. Everything starts to bloom out. The fields and the trees and the bushes all start coming back to life again. And it's a wonderful time to take a walk with somebody that you love. And so that's what he's got in mind. He says, oh, Everybody's singing because it's spring again. The flowers are out there. There's turtle doves calling everywhere. They're cooing everywhere. And isn't there just something special about the sound of doves in the distance when you're out enjoying the spring? The fig tree ripens its figs, and the vines are in blossom, and they give forth fragrance. So again, we know it's spring. The fig trees are starting to put on their blossoms, and their very earliest figs. The vines are all putting their blossoms on, and we already heard her compare his smell to the smell, the sweet, lovely, desirable smell of the vineyards in En-Gedi. So, arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the crannies of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet, and your face is lovely. So she compares his voice to the call of the turtle doves, right? And talks about his face being a little bit, something she wants to see here and there, everywhere around. She already described how he's kind of showing up and peeking around, you know, the lattice work over the walls to try to get a glimpse of her, and she's trying to get a glimpse of him. Verse 15, I think it's possible that this should be marked as a chorus, that this is a choral response where the young ladies join with her to sing to the young man to say this, catch the little foxes for us, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. Now, one of the problems they'd run into in the early spring is when the vines begin to put their blossoms on and all that fragrance would start filling the air, that the little fennec foxes, which are native to Israel, would come into the vineyards and they would chew on those blossoms because they were sweet and tasty. And so apparently that was a problem because every blossom they chewed on would not produce a grape cluster, and that's difficult. So they'd have to chase the foxes away in the spring. So I think the female chorus joining in with the young lady is inviting the boyfriend, come help us out in the vineyards. Help us to keep the little fennec foxes away from our blossomed out vines to keep them from, so that we can have a good crop, besides which we want the smell as well. And then we go back to her. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He grazes among the lilies until the day breathes and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on cleft mountains. So she has been using this imagery of a deer or a young gazelle antelope sort that are a little bit skittish. They're out and about. They're grazing here and there. And so you know how it is. If you're ever out and about where there's wild deer that come to the edge of the woods and they'll start grazing on things. And they're always, you know, looking around. They'll raise their head at the slightest sound and look around, flick that little tail. And if they get a little bit scared, off they go, right? Up the tail goes and off they go back into the woods. And so she's kind of picturing him like that, that he's a little bit hesitant to come and be with her, even though she'd like to go with him and, you know, spend some more time away. They're grazing among the lilies. He's grazing among the lilies like those deer would be. And so waiting for maybe the day to finish up. I said earlier, perhaps there's a little bit of a day off here. Maybe it's a Sabbath day. But it's also possible that it was a work day and they had to wait until all the work was done before they could spend some time together. Now, chapter 3, and remember, there were no chapters, no verses back at the time this first was done. There were no headings, as far as we could tell, to the different places. The English Standard Version, and I think a few other English versions, are the ones that provide kind of a inline heading to help us understand where she's singing and where he's singing and where other people are singing. There may be a bit of a change of an act here, where we move ahead in time, and she has a dream, and it's a little bit of a scary dream, and she's anxious. Remember, we were just seeing that she was wanting him to come bounding over. He's a little furtive, looking around, and then maybe like a gazelle, he's a little bit skittish and kind of runs off. So she has a dream that's a little anxious about him not being around. And so this is how this presents itself in our opera now. Verse 1 of chapter 3. On my bed by night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but found him not. So she has a dream, and in her dream, she's looking for him. Interestingly enough, she's actually kind of thinking about him being in bed with her. All right? But he's not anywhere around in this dream. So verse 2, I will rise now. I'll go about the city. The city would be Jerusalem. In the streets and in the squares, I will seek him whom my soul loves. So she goes in her dream out into the streets and into the broad places of the city of Jerusalem looking for him. I sought him, but found him not. The watchmen found me as they went about in the city, which probably indicates that she's dreaming that she's looking for him at night, because that's the more important time for the watchman to be out and about. Have you seen him whom my soul loves? So she asked the watchman, have you seen my boyfriend? Scarcely had I passed them. So apparently they hadn't. Scarcely had I passed them when I found him whom my soul loves. And I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her who conceived me. So in her dream, because that's what this is, she dreams that she finds her boyfriend. She brings him home to mom. I get the impression that in the way that this story is told, that she lives at Jerusalem with her mom. And she brings him into the chamber of mom, meaning mom's place, which seems to indicate that she's working things out to get married to him. At least in her dream, that's how she's thinking about this, is that he's going to get married to her, so he needs to stick around and know her family well. And then we see a repeat of the idea from earlier in our opera, sung by this lady. It says, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the does of the field, that you not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. And I told you the first time that we saw that, that I believe that is the way that the opera is communicating the sense of, don't hurry love. Don't rush it. Don't push faster or harder than what you should. Take the time to develop the relationship, to let it find its own way. And so that seems to be thematic to the opera here. Verse number 6. Now, this, I think, is perhaps a chorus singing this, rather than the young lady, which is the way that the English Standard Version seems to present it. Now, remember that the two of them work for King Solomon. I think that's pretty clear. He works with animals, including being a shepherd. She works in the palace itself, because she has contact with King Solomon, but also works with the goats that seem to belong to the kitchen restaurant, or the kitchen that belongs to the restaurant. So they have seen plenty of things related to King Solomon as the great king of Israel. And that would include weddings, his getting married, having state functions of taking on new treaty wives or concubines. And so I believe that this is probably a choral part. It's like a little interlude where King Solomon comes into the story. Because remember, I don't think this is written by King Solomon. I think it's written as something dedicated to the king, honoring how he has brought Israel to its climactic moment in history, where everybody is prospering and everybody is at peace. So what is this coming from the wilderness, like columns of smoke? Now, the columns of smoke may actually be a reference to the idea that from a long distance, a very large entourage kicks up dust, and you can see it at a distance. So that might be what's in reference here. But it's pointed next to smelling it, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the fragrant powders of a merchant. Well, behold, it is the litter of Solomon. Around it are 60 mighty men, some of the mighty men of Israel, all of them wearing swords and expert in war, each with his sword at his thigh against terror by night. So Solomon is arriving with his entourage, including his extensive bodyguard. Probably more ceremonial than pragmatic, because this is a time of great peace. King Solomon made himself a carriage from the wood of Lebanon. Maybe a carriage with wheels, possibly a sedan chair, which is carried on poles, very much like the Ark of the Covenant was God's sedan chair. But it's a very expensive thing that he is being carried on. He made its posts of silver, its back of gold, its seat of purple. Its interior was inlaid with love by the daughters of Jerusalem. So it's made right there at Jerusalem, and it is special. And then, go out, O daughters of Jerusalem, and look upon King Solomon with the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, on the day of the gladness of his heart. So I think this is the cameo appearance in the opera of King Solomon. It is a nod to why everybody is pleased with him, because he has brought such peace and prosperity. Now, verse 1 of chapter 4, we go back to the young man singing. He sings to his beloved, "Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil." See, there's the veil again, because she's an unmarried young lady. She's of marriageable age or betrothable age, but she's unmarried, and so she wears a veil across her lower face whenever she's out in public. But her eyes are there above the veil, darting around, kind of like doves, you know, doing their bebopping thing. But then he says this, "Your hair is like a flock of goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead. Now, goats tend to be black in this time period and in this culture. And so her tresses are very dark, and they're hanging down on her shoulders and onto her back. And so he says, they look like little parades of goats coming down from the hills. Now, for some people, that would sound insulting. But in this time period, in this culture, this would be sweet talking. Same thing with this next part. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes, meaning little sheep that have been recently sheared. So we're down to not quite the skin, but the lowest level of their wool. And so not only is it white, but it's also been washed. They've come up from the washing. So this is a poetic way of saying your teeth are so white, all of which bear twins, and not one among them has lost its young. Now, this is the funny part, is that he's basically saying, and you've got two teeth, upper and lower, that match each other all across your smile. You don't have any missing teeth. Now, why would that be so significant? Well, remember, this is an era in which stone ground grain was the norm. And so you can't help but end up with a little bit of that grit in your bread. And so a lot of people ended up getting enamelware pretty bad because of the stone ground grain being in their bread. And so some people would get cavities and end up losing teeth. Well, she's not in that. She's got beautiful white teeth, and they're all there. Continuing in his sweet talking. Your lips are like a scarlet thread, and your mouth is lovely. So she probably is wearing something like lipstick as well, and he compliments her on that. Your cheeks are like halves of a pomegranate beyond your veil. Now, pomegranate, when you cut it open, it's very red on the inside. So she may be actually wearing some rouge on her cheeks, just under her eyes. And so that's showing above her veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built in rows of stone. Now, that is more than likely a reference to her jewelry, her decorations that she's wearing. We keep reading. It says, on it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. And so she may actually be wearing some hand-me-down jewelry that is very beautiful on her neck. And then we get to the part, again, I've reminded you that this is PG-13 material. He's being a little bit forward in his comments. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle that graze among the lilies. So I love the way your breasts look underneath your clothes, right? Until the day breathes and the shadows flee, I will go away to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. Now, he's definitely doing some very forward talking here, because remember, when she was singing, she was saying that she wished that he could be between her breasts like a sachet of myrrh. Well, here he mentions her breasts and immediately follows it up with, I would like to be in the cleft of the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. So he's singing back to her about something she sang earlier. I told you that this is PG-13 stuff here. This is not for the little kids, okay? You are altogether beautiful, my love. There is no flaw in you. So definitely he wants her to understand how much he appreciates her. Come with me, from Lebanon, my bride. Come with me from Lebanon. Depart from the peak of Amana, from the peak of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, from the mountains of leopards. Now, I am always curious about this section here because it's mentioning places that are up in the north. Is it possible that they travel with Solomon from time to time? And maybe they've seen all of these places, and he makes reference to them as let's go away from these wonderful places that we've been with the king and find our own special place. It's also possible this is where he's from. We're pretty sure that she's from Shunem, which is in the Valley of Jezreel, just south of the hills of Galilee. But we don't have any references to where he's from exactly. Verse number 9, you have captivated my heart, my sister, my bride. Some people get confused with the sister here. It's actually more of a generic term of young lady idea, okay? You've captivated my heart with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine and the fragrance of your oils than any spice. So you can tell now he's starting to use language, the bride language here, that he makes it very clear, I want us to get married. I want us to be husband and wife because you have caught my heart. And I want to give myself completely to you. I want us to be more intimate. I want us to be ultimately intimate. So that's all coming up in our songs here at this point in the opera. But we have run out of time, and so we're going to have to mark our place right there, and we'll get back into it the next time God lets us get into His Word.